Hello and welcome to Power Reflections, a proud member of the Doof Network, where we reflect on Wildbow's most wordy work as it releases. I'm Ruben Morehouse.
And I'm Elliot Diebold.
Oh, and is that just a recording or is that the real Elliot? I'll never tell.
I mean, for the listener's perspective, is there a different? Like, it's always just a recording.
You're right, it is always just a recording. It's very existential. Anyway, yeah, we're coming to you live again. We're live again back in the Discord, so if you want to tune in to the live episode recordings, join the Discord, I guess.
Yeah, they're back. Everything's back to normal. The holiday schedule is over, thank goodness. Yeah, it's all back to normal.
Hooray. Yeah, I guess let's get into it. Oh, it's so weird to be back doing this with a real human being.
It's so much better. I hated doing them solo.
It was weird, wasn't it? I think they were all right, but it was, you know, it's different. Anyway, today we're talking about Left in the Dust 16.6 and 16.7. 16.6 with Lucy, and it starts with some flashbacks. We've got young Lucy being frustrated by her unfair treatment before being comforted by Paul. I keep reading comforted by Paul and my brain wants to read it as confronted by Paul. And I'm like, no, that's not what's happening. He's being nice.
Yeah, he's just being a good dad.
Yeah, and I think this was an interesting way to start this chapter, right? Because like it features Paul being like a good parent. Like, you know, not perfect, of course. Like he pretty clearly isn't aware enough to kind of recognize or maybe like confident enough to comment on the thing that we as the audience pick up on this, which is, you know, this unfair treatment is clearly some kind of racial bias from a teacher or something, right? But even without him kind of going all the way on that, it's clear that they have a really strong, positive and pretty healthy relationship. And it, you know, we obviously can't divorce ourselves from what happens with Paul in this story. And so it's just kind of really like strange and melancholy, even as the vibes of this flashback are somewhat happy.
Yeah, it's weird because I think we've always heard like Paul was actually a pretty great dad when he was there and like a good, I don't think he was ever quite a husband, but like, you know, he was Jasmine's partner for like almost a decade. And I don't think, based on what we've seen of Jasmine, like, you know, she wouldn't have let him stay around for that long if there wasn't a lot of good in him. It's just we've only seen the bad,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
so it was really
definitely
interesting, like, opening this chapter and you're sort of like, oh, yeah, I kind of did need that reminder that, like, Paul was so close to being, like, who Lucy needed and, like, what the world needed.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Yeah, he's really like quite a strong father figure. And it's just such a strange, I mean, yeah, I guess it sets the tone for these flashbacks quite well, which is all just like kind of weird and tense and stressful moments, I suppose.
Yeah, Lucy thinks on it later as like the list of all of her failures.
Yeah, which is such a whack way to think about it, 100%. But yeah, like the fact that this one has made the list, I guess it's just like representative of a failure of Lucy to maintain, or I mean, it's not even a failure of Lucy, right? Like there's no way you can categorize it as being that.
Yeah, it's like just coming at it from her perspective, she views these as like a list of her failures. So like, I think she views this one as like her losing that ability to like, I don't know, hold on to the joy of the world or like see the good or something, like something along those lines. Like you know, this is when Paul was good. This is when he was able to kind of distract her from something that was getting her down and like help her, you know, he doesn't really help her get over it. Like this was one thing that jumped out to me. He didn't fix it. He kind of distracts her from it.
No, definitely.
So it's like, you know, those warning signs are there, but like this was when Lucy was younger, she had a nice like backpack with hearts on it and she was able to move past the bad things, sort of find the joy. And that I think is what she sort of lost. And the failure she's dwelling on is like after Paul left, losing that ability to do that herself.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, just I mean, yeah. Oh, you know, it's a Lucy chapter, so you got to expect some heartbreak at this point, I guess. But
and tension and stress, which really define Lucy at the moment in a very worrying way.
Yeah, but like in this flashback, even Booker's kind of a mixed bag. Like, I think his first comment when Lucy sort of storms through the door in a huff and like throws her stuff to the side is Booker's like, "Oh, don't make this like harder on me and Mum," which, you know, he's probably like 15 at this point, so like, you know, I'm not going to judge him too harshly, but it is just so funny to think that in this scene, I think Booker is mildly helpful at best right at the end, whereas like Paul really carries the weight, and that's just so far from what we're used to between these two.
Yeah. It's just, it gives it such a like wrong vibe, I guess.
Yeah, like I read this the first time and I was like, what is this sacrilegious text?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we flashed through some other triggering moments for Lucy. So when she's at the end of John's gun, being last in class ranker, Gabe's death, Alexander's death, and John's death.
You know, happy fun time Lucy chapter vibe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The question I was... I had in my head as I was reading this was like, why are we seeing this? You know, like what is Wabo getting from tormenting us like this? No, like, you know, what is why narratively is it important for us to be taking a look through Lucy's low points, I guess you would call them. And I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like there's a bit of the vibe of this chapter and next chapter of tension building, right? Because we're going into this domain ritual and the story is kind of priming us to expect troubling things to happen, which is fun. But yeah, I'm kind of like thinking through it and thinking it feels like Lucy's setting up to make, I don't know, to make some kind of moderate character choice. And at the end of the story, at the end of this chapter, she kind of is taking steps towards that in some decisions that she makes, which we'll get to later. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's just very interesting that we get kind of these, just like a flashback of all these traumatic moments, I suppose. Most violent, except for the class ranker and the poor one. The others are all, you know, violence related.
Although it's almost never her doing the violence. The violence being done around her. I agree. I kind of had that same impression where like I was reading through and I was like, I know we're about to do Verona's domain ritual, and next chapter is very much leading us into Verona's domain ritual.
Yes.
This chapter though, like as you said, going through all those flashbacks, it feels like we're about to head into some giant capstone for a chunk of Lucy's arc as well. Like I'm almost now anticipating part of Verona's domain ritual is going to include some very important moment for Lucy, because this felt like a really big moment of Wabo sort of reminding us like the whole journey. And in my head, that's just something you sort of do before a big moment. In this chapter, as you said, I suppose we'll get to it, but she chooses some of her personal life over the battle, and that's sort of the theme of the chapter. But like, it almost feels like there's more to do from this big build up at the start of the chapter. Maybe I've just blown it up in my head, but that's what it feels like.
I'm with you there. I don't know. It kind of feels like we could be blowing it up more than it should be, but I'm with you on it. And the other part to me of it is like the lingering question of next chapter is who's going to show up to fuck with this domain ritual.
Yeah.
And so my head is trying to put these two things together and be like, who from Lucy's kind of aspects of the story could show up to really fuck with things that would be a kind of a trial for the Kenneteers collectively, mainly Verona, but with a bit of like, you know, Lucy introspection as well. Yeah. And I don't have a great answer. Maybe Timone? I don't know.
Well, we do get a thing, I think it's in the next chapter, Verona very briefly confirms that Lucy is available to, like, fight for her.
Yeah.
In this ritual, which, like, we still don't understand the rules of this ritual, and we'll get there at the end of this episode. But, like, I think there's a moment where Verona kind of confirms Lucy will sort of fight for her and stuff. Oh, so, yeah, you're right. Like,
I've cracked it. Shit. Yeah. I don't want to say it now because I think if I say it, it's going to be true and Wabo will make it not happen or something. But here's what's going to happen, Elliot. Guillaume is going to contest the domain ritual. and it's going to be a Lucy and Guillaume showdown. Now, is Guillaume going to contest the ritual? I don't fully know, but something to do with his winteriness. Does that track? That feels like it tracks.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't feel like I have a full model of him as a winter fairy. So, like, there could be a reason that in retrospect I'll kind of get, but I can't put it together now.
All right. I want some prediction points if that ends up being true.
I mean, I do. I just really like this idea of it would feel like it would tie into what we're seeing here in Lucy's chapter and in Verona's the next one. If Lucy was to get very seriously hurt in the domain ritual on Verona's behalf, I think that would bring a lot of these things together and also be a great opportunity to really dive into the awkward relationship these two have had since Arc 13 and kind of figure out where we're going there. So in my head, it's already starting to get confirmed that Lucy's going to end up in a fight and get hurt in this ritual.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. The other option, as I'm easily impressed, mentions, is a secret practitioner showing up that is someone that Lucy knows. I mean, you know.
Aunt Heather time.
Aunt Heather is, Aunt Heather is the perfect...
Walbo's held her in his up his sleeve for a year and a half.
Anyway. So we jump ahead and Lucy is doing some training with Bracken and Guillaume, and it's pretty it's pretty stressful stuff.
Yeah, we've sort of talked about how winter is this like analog to aging in a lot of ways. And seeing Guillaume here reminded me of, you know how you see like people in their 60s or like boomers and stuff, and it's like they used to be progressive or, you know, agile in their thought patterns, and as they've aged, they've just sort of lost that, and, you know, they'll switch to being conservative, or like, you know, they won't be as agile in a job if they're still working. And that's what it like feels like here with Guillaume. He's like seemingly lost this sort of ability to empathize properly because he's just become so static in his point of view. Like he doesn't give a shit about the pain he's inflicting on Lucy. He just sees it as like part of the training, which
wasn't
really a vibe he had before. Like it was tough, but kind of fair. Now it just feels tough.
Well, it's the transition from like, we do things this way because it will give us the best results and we'll do this kind of thing, into like more of a vibe of like, we do it this way because this is the way it's done, you know, like missing the forest for the missing the trees for the forest. I don't know. One of those two.
But it's like, you just see it with people, like, as they sort of cross this age threshold, like it happens to people too. And it's just as frustrating when it happens in real life.
Yeah, luckily we have Melissa here to kind of keep our spirits high. Melissa has some fucking great lines. One of my favorite moments is when Bracken pulls off his sweater and a few lines later Melissa just says, "I'm staying." In direct response to Bracken becoming shirtless, which I think is very funny.
Yeah, I think it was a really good writing decision to include Melissa here because, as you said, she's just thirsty Melissa. And Bracken is just always hilarious. And I think after the dour fucking start to this chapter and then this grueling fight, I think we needed Melissa here to add some comedy, or this chapter would have just been like super draining to read.
I'm glad we have Melissa here to keep our spirits high for sure.
Do you think, has Bracken picked up at all that Melissa is... I don't even want to say hitting on him because that implies a subtlety that I don't think is present.
I don't know. Surely he must have picked up on it, right? I mean, you know, he's not the best with like social cues and stuff, I suppose.
He's just like, he's expressed zero recognition. Like, to me, he hasn't even given off the vibe of, oh, I see what she's doing, but I don't feel that way, so I'm just going to kind of, you know, let her down gently by not saying anything. He just seems to have genuinely not even considered the fact that that's what's happening. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we don't know what Bracken's kind of situation is. Like, one, it's pretty clear that he's not the best with, like, social situations, so perhaps he just is not practiced at picking up on cues. But also, two, you know, maybe he's just not keen. He did spend some time with the family man, which would almost certainly give you some traumatic, experiences around relationships.
Yeah, I guess we'll say, I don't know. I just get the vibe that he hasn't even noticed that that's what she's doing.
Yeah, definitely. It's possible. Bracken and Lucy repeat their sparring a few times, and Guillemet takes this opportunity to teach some lessons, I guess you could call it, doing that, teaching lessons.
I'm so terrified of, like, Guillemet keeps telling us, oh, this is going to get harsher and we're going to start using more winter glamour so that injuries will last more permanent. Longer.
Yeah.
Like this is some, this is some medieval shit right here.
Yeah. Lucy, you really got to stop with these lessons, I think.
It's terrifying. I know I'm jumping ahead in the notes a bit, but it is terrifying that she's still coming to these, right? Like,
yeah. But
even Guillemet basically says later on in the lesson, like, why are you still coming here? that tiny glimmer of old Guillemet where, like, he pops up and is just like, hey, why are you still here? Get out.
But the problem is that the lesson that Lucy is taught by Guillemet here is very applicable to her. Like, the lesson is basically you're waiting for your opponents to make mistakes and finding their weaknesses, which has worked for you. But if you face an opponent who doesn't make mistakes, it's not going to work for you. And also you're not like developing your own strengths. Right. And that's like very much a good one point lesson for Lucy. So like the problem is Guillemet is still delivering good lessons, good and like tailored specific lessons to Lucy that she, I think, needs to hear.
It's the dressing that I don't like.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's clearly still good as a teacher. It's just, these lessons, it's rough.
I love that lesson of not focusing on their weaknesses but focusing on your strengths, for how it ties into not just fighting their new enemies, because I think you could argue that like that is part of the reason they lost to people like Massa and Charles, because they don't make mistakes. But it also ties in a great way to Lucy's more civilian sort of arc at the moment, which is, you know, in that crusade she's on to improve society, it's not just about like pointing out the bad. She also like needs to be a bit of a beacon of the good, I guess.
Yeah.
Like this is Guillemet saying, yeah, like don't just like bring down the other people when they make mistakes, but also like be the example, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it's especially important because, you know, the first part of this chapter is Lucy getting upset partially because she can't place in her mind something that she thinks she's really good at, right? Like, Guillemet has perfectly honed into that.
Yeah, you're right. And I guess this has been Lucy's thing. It's something that's been very overtly discussed in Verona's head for a long time, is like, what is her specialty going to be or whatever. And I think, like, yeah, Lucy's done a lot of this fae dueling and stuff, but aside from that and, like, dabbling with curses, she's never felt like she had, like, a thing herself, and I guess she's going to start struggling with that too now, maybe, as she's moving, because it's definitely, you're right, it's set up pretty heavily in this chapter. But, yeah, like, I guess to just go back a bit, like, you brought up that great lesson Guillemet mentions of, like, focusing on your own strengths, not your enemy's weaknesses. And then Lucy points out, well, it was the right strategy for this fight because I won. And Guillemet responds, no, you must do better. Which just jumped out to me because it was a complete failure to engage with like her response at all. Like it was very much like, you know, that mom telling the young kid, because I said so, energy. Which is just like, because I agree with what you said. I think that lesson he has is actually a really powerful lesson that Lucy needs to take on board. But it's not going to sink in as readily when he can't, like, address her concerns with it in this way. So, it's just this new Guillemet. There's some really good stuff in there. You've just got to wade through all this new bullshit to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about the relationship with Guillemet at this point. Like, it's pretty clear to me that Lucy is holding on to it because she's been losing a lot of important mentor relationships to her. And I appreciate that, Lucy, but also, like, you know, it's clearly degrading pretty rapidly.
I actually got the vibe from this chapter that her coming to this training was less to do with holding on to the relationship with Guillaume and more, like, when Guillaume basically asks her, why the fuck are you still here? She responds with that whole, like, I, you know, saw the sadness in John's eyes and you know, I think it was Booker's, and she's seen it in, like, her mom's as well, and she doesn't want to see that anymore. And so it was very much, like, more a vibe to me of the reason she's still coming here is because, as terrible as these lessons are, she wants to learn those good parts because she's desperate to get stronger and, you know, be a warrior. Basically, she's putting the weight of the world on her shoulders again. It's a very early story, Lucy. Like, she hasn't fully overcome that tendency she has to take responsibility for everyone in this way.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that'll just be interesting to track forward, especially if we do see her fighting for Verona in the Domain chapter. Like, this is, yeah, she you know, puts herself on the line and pushes herself too far in order to try and do things for other people, and that's gonna, you know, she needs to do a bit of self care. She starts to at the end of the chapter, but yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the lessons wrap up and Lucy and Melissa chat about their upcoming plan. Melissa is doing so well. The thing that made me think this was, like, the more she kind of acts as their blackguard, the more she seems, I don't know, like, inspired, you know what I mean? Like, the bit where she was, she's still going about it in her own Melissa-y way, but the bit where she was reflecting on how, like, she really loved having her body back in the nightmare and was like, hey, maybe I can get Guillaume to train me. I mean, like, that's obviously a terrible idea, but she's clearly got, yeah, as Mirthstrike says, she's got a role, like, she's got something that she can, that she cares about, and that's enough to have something that she can latch onto. I just think it's great. I really enjoy it. I'm really enjoying Melissa. I've always enjoyed her as a character. She's just so fun.
Yeah, I think it's great because if you remember just how insufferable she kind of was back in, like, Arc 9, she was just this pain in the ass who everyone kept saying, like, you know, go away. And the conventional wisdom of this world is bringing someone in like this is bad for them. And I love that Melissa is now just becoming a really good example of, well, just challenging that sort of trope. Like, she's much, much better for them bringing her in as a blackguard, like you said. Like, she has a role now, she has something to do, and it's better for her, and it's great for them. Like, you know, Lucy and Verona kind of put her in charge of the fetches, which is a huge asset to have someone to do that with. So yeah, like, you know, this is hugely better. Before they took her on as a blackguard, she was, like, getting drunk with her cousins in a parking lot trying to have sex with 18-year-olds. Like, huge improvement.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, speaking of characters that we like, Bracken, still a bit of a jerk, but really, like, picking up weight around Kennet. You know, he talks about going to help out with the refugees from the Undercity. Yeah, you know, good stuff, Bracken. Good stuff, Melissa. I love them both. They're a great pair. Let's do it.
Yeah. And because he's our kind of go-to example of how you can take these violent people from the Undercity and make them functional members of society. And it seems to be going pretty well so far.
Yeah. yeah, it was good stuff. So yeah, Lucy meets Verona and they're starting to kind of do some prep for the ritual, but she goes over to help, but then it's this weird vibe where it doesn't really feel like Lucy can do anything to help. She just kind of is checking in, I guess, which is good.
Yeah, it's very much that post-Arc 13 Lucy Verona energy. If she sort of shows up, checks in, and then leaves, and they're not like, I mean, it feels like an improvement because I don't remember any moments where it was sort of like, oh, this is awkward, and oh, I need to back off. It felt like a much more natural interaction between the two of them, even if it's like more stilted than it would have been 10 arcs ago. It's like, it feels like they're sort of finding an equilibrium, which, as I'm saying it now, makes me more convinced that, you know, there'll be this fight in the Domain ritual which fucks that up.
Yeah.
But as not close to, as far away as it is from what they used to be, it feels like this was one of the first interactions between the two of them where I was like, oh, Lucy isn't actively, like, setting Verona off or having to back off. It's just, yeah, they were talking.
True. It's not as good as it used to be, but it's also, I mean, there was a time there where it was pretty rough. So.
Yeah, it's been worse, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, then Lucy goes to meet with Toady, who has brought in some outside help for the ritual, I think.
I figured they were mostly here for the market, so I think it's kind of a two birds, one stone situation.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, and it's good stuff. I mean, we see some of Toady's friends. We see Dee. We see Bubble Yum, let's call her.
Yeah, we finally see Bubble Yum. It was great. Like, I guess we saw her in flashbacks, but
yes.
It was very fun to see it. The pink hair she has is almost more concerning given her name.
Let's not think about it. That's my strategy.
There was a mention, like you brought up like Dee Dee, and Toadslaw mentions that she didn't bring along her munchkin, which like, is that a kid? Does Dee Dee have a kid? Is it the kid from 10.E? Like, remember in 10.E, she was the one who like was living in that girl's house and then killed the girl's abusive stepfather and just like brought her down to the Warrens.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that's the kid that we're talking about. She's adopted that child.
Oh, like, can we do that? Let's pivot the story. I want to see goblin parenting, especially if it's of a human.
Yeah, I mean, Dee Dee really just deserves more of her own story, right? Like, I know we all want to see more of what happens after Dee Dee adopts a kid.
Goblin who, like...
a baby's day out style thing where this baby is just kind of accidentally getting into horrible situations and Dee Dee is kind of accidentally... using horrible things to get the baby out of these situations, and I think it would just be delightful.
Also, I just love Dee Dee's energy of like, she's always trying to act like this big bad goblin, but like, as Toadslaw mentions, she just seems to have a real soft spot for humans, and she's like, really, she really excitedly says bye to Lucy as she leaves. Like, she seems to have really taken to Lucy. Like, she's just so friendly.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a friendly goblin. I want it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And boogeymen, huh? So there are two boogeymen on the team. Killwagon, who sounds delightful, but also the Milkmaid, who we've met before. And I think, I mean, there's obviously it's a mixed bag here, but I'm excited to see what the Milkmaid looks like in combat, you know, turning people into cows or whatever the Milkmaid is going to do.
The Milkmaid seems like a powerful ally, but... Yeah, I mean, there's obviously, like, a whole slew of ethical stuff with... Like, because we've seen the other... We've only seen the other side of the Milkmaid. And, I mean, this is what we brought up when Toady first brought up his concept of, like, a goblin market. It was like, there are a lot of goblins who do bad shit. And, like, you know, we're bringing someone like the Milkmaid. That's icky, right?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it is icky. I think it's... Yeah, like the question, I've seen a few people posing the question of like, hey, if the Milkmaid is like on our team, does that mean that we're kind of embracing the worst of the world here?
Well, I remember getting a ton of shit from everyone in Arc 5 when I was questioning why the pig dog man wasn't allowed into Kennet. Because it was sort of like, because I wasn't questioning that decision. He was clearly a piece of shit, but I was saying, what are the rules for who is and isn't allowed in Kennet? And now we're sort of bringing the Milkmaid in and using her for security, and she seems even worse than the pig dog man.
Yeah.
So it's very much this vibe of like, it feels like some sort of moral thing has slipped a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll be interested to see where Kennet explores that.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're defining themselves based on, you know, the market and all that stuff.
Yeah, but, like, I don't think, like, if Lucy knows the full picture of the Milkmaid, I don't know that Lucy could ever fully condone a copy of the market that had the Milkmaid in it, surely.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I agree. but it'll be fun to see the Milkmaid fight, so...
Yeah, I'm excited to see her in that, like, as a reader, as a fairy sort of thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, Wallace has returned to Kennet and still has not reached out to Lucy. So instead, Lucy decides to visit him. And yeah, I mean, I love this scene, right?
Yeah, after a whole chapter of Lucy kind of picking the train with Guillaume and do all this other stuff where she was putting the weight of the world on her shoulders and thinking about like how she had failed to be the person who kept that joy in her life. I love that Rook turns this visiting Wallace into a binary of do you like kind of pick the war or your personal life? And Lucy finally chooses her personal life at the end of this chapter and goes to Wallace instead of doing like her job. It's just like after all the shit in this chapter, it's nice to see her right at the end still hang on to some personal stuff first.
Yeah, it's really nice. Like, I love this way that she recognizes, like, yeah, Rook's advice is good, but I just want to be kinder and gentler. And she does. And this is great. Like, yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
It's cool in that, like, it's indicative of that way the Kenneteers have grown to the point where they can listen to their mentor's advice, but not kind of take it as gospel. Like, Lucy knows people like Guillaume and Rook well enough to know what parts of their advice to listen to and when to ignore it, which I think maybe, you know, you don't have when you're younger. You tend to take everything from an authority figure a bit as gospel. Mm. Whereas, like, because you're right, like, she mentions, like, well, Rook's advice is good, but not for this situation.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, speaking of Rook, Rook wishes Lucy good luck with her boyfriend too, which just felt like a big moment for Rook to say something like that to a practitioner.
yeah. Rook and Lucy clearly are having a good relationship at the moment.
Yeah, like, because sort of, I think right before it, Rook sort of is like, oh, I don't think there's a chance for this lost Kennet to work. But I think that says more about me than the plan, which is, you know, comments we've had from other people like Miss is that Rook is set in the idea that they're going to lose.
Mm.
But, like, I don't think Rook's giving herself enough credit because she's talking about how she can't change and she sees this as a loss because of who she is. But then, like, a minute later, she's wishing a practitioner luck with her boyfriend. Like, that... You know, come on, Rook, you could change. Like, also, you're an Oni. What are you talking about being stuck in your ways? That's yeah, isn't exactly. The whole point of an Oni not to do that?
Mm. Yeah. Rook is interesting. I don't know what to think about Rook at the moment. I feel like she's, I don't know. I worry that Rook is going to go off the deep end with this domain thing.
Yeah, to jump ahead a bit, there's that moment where Miss is like, oh, is Rook going to have a problem with the domain plan? And Verona's like, ah, she shouldn't. And I was like, I know, right? Oh, that seems like something you should have got a hard confirmation of, yeah, girls.
100%.
Like, she was in the room when we planned it, so she would have spoken up. Seems to have been the assumption that they've made, which I don't know how smart an assumption that is.
Yeah.
Although, knowing Rook, I'd like to think Rook is good enough that she wouldn't challenge them to, like, a fight, but maybe she'll ask for some kind of weird concession. I don't know how it works, but like I could see Rook sort of being like, hey, we can fight or you can do this thing for me. And it hopefully won't be too unreasonable an ask.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Anything else we want to touch on for this chapter before we move on to the next one?
I do just want to shout out, like, Wallace's whole thing where he was like, he didn't respond to people and then it felt like there was too much pressure to respond and it would be weird to respond, so he just kept not doing it, making the problem worse, was very relatable.
Mm. Yep.
But I'm glad Lucy chose to not hold it against him.
Yeah, she did well here. She did well choosing herself and her happiness. But yeah, let's go on to 16:7. We're with Verona. Wabba wants to keep the tension high, so we start this chapter, of course, at home with Brett.
Well, it's even worse, because the very first line is that reminder that, like, the starting gun for this domain ritual could go off at any second.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of immediately like, okay, Verona is dealing with all this pressure of trying to be as ready as she can for this domain ritual. It's a very big deal. There's a lot of pressure. And then we jump into Brett and it's just like, oh, like this is classic Verona. She's got this really big thing she needs to stress about, but it is just her role in life to also have all this other nonsense climbing on top and like not allowing her to stress about the thing she needs to stress about.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
Brett is in here claiming that doing the dishes is a 10 out of 10 important.
Yeah, for fuck's thing. Sake. Can you ever imagine dishes being a 10 out of 10 priority? Like, what would have to, there would have to be some kind of organ ready for transplant being buried under those dishes for it to be a 10 out of 10. Legitimately, like, it's such a clear marker that VD is just so warped that he just has no conception of anything.
Yeah, because he starts them at 8, right?
Yeah.
Which is just, I feel like dishes max out at a 7 out of 10, unless there's some weird smell coming off them and you can tell something was in there and has died.
Yeah. Even that then, maybe pops it to an 8. That's an 8. Yeah, exactly. Maybe a 9.
I had to resist pulling out so many of Brett's lines because, as always, they're ridiculous and don't make sense and hypocritical. Like, he's constantly complaining about how she needs to do this stuff because he doesn't have time to do it himself, but apparently he has all this time to follow her around and fucking yell at her. And it was just do it with her. Like this would be so much more. I would almost be willing to take Brett's side if he was like, hey, we're going to do the dishes, we're going to do the laundry, but he doesn't.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk about him. I don't know. Alchemical Heart, can we talk about that?
Yeah, I just will quickly say, I just love it, though, how he's not even the focus for even Verona. He's just like, I love him as this role of, he's just something that's making what she actually has to deal with harder, because that's what he is in her life. He's not the support. He's someone who just makes everything a bit harder.
He's just a source of pain. Yeah. I mean, like, it's pretty clear at this point that Verona is just going to start living at the house on Half Street before too long.
Yeah.
Alchemical Heart, kind of fun, fun comedic beat to keep the story light while Verona is dealing with hell.
Yeah, I love both the moment where she's trying to figure out if this thing is toothpaste, or like later there's the moment where she almost drinks like dish cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Because she thought she like turned the tap on. It's just like, it's hilarious, but it's also like, I'm entirely on Lucy's side, where it concerns the fuck out of me how not seriously Verona is taking this side effect. She almost kills herself.
Yep. Good stuff, Verona.
Classic Verona.
Classic Verona. I mean, yeah, it is classic Verona to not take the fact that there will be consequences of her actions seriously. Her hand is a constant reminder of that.
I mean, well, it's just kind of ironic too, because what the result of this alchemical heart is basically other people have to essentially babysit her to make sure she doesn't drink like dish detergent.
Yes, true. It's a good point. It's not, while yes, she is suffering the effects of it, the real reality is that it means that other people have to put in more effort for her.
Yeah. And it's weird, she didn't seem to notice that, and I wonder if that is pointed out to her. I feel like she would be mortified, because that is, like, everything she stands against.
Mm.
Lucy, if you want to stop her doing this again, that's the ticket. Point out that other people have to support her when she does it.
Yeah,
I reckon it'll stop pretty quick.
Yep.
But it's also our first example of something that I think we see a lot of in this chapter, which is, like, Verona is letting the pressure of being ready for this ritual get to her so much that she kind of keeps injuring and putting herself on the line before the ritual. And like this, it seems to kind of work out by the end, but it's like, if Miss had shown up throughout most of this first day that this chapter covers, Verona would have been fucked, because she kept like putting herself on the line in a way that was like, or, like, you taking unnecessary risks and putting yourself in a bad position to be ready for this ritual. Like, and if it had come up at the wrong time, she would have been fucked.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting point. So, I mean, we've kind of skipped around a bit, but Lucy, you know, shows up to chat to Verona and saves her from her dad, or makes it worse. It's hard to tell, but at least it resolves it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, at least he's still trying to appear like he's got his life together. Although, it kind of highlights the fact that he does that when Lucy's around, but like is willing to break down like this in front of Verona, really just highlights how fucked up their balance is.
Yeah, I'm not sure who it was. Someone said it in chat a little bit ago. I can't find it. Oh, yeah, it was Zykri saying, like, Brett backs off when Lucy shows up. And it seems unconscious, right? Like, but it's a clear marker that he knows it's wrong. He knows it's wrong. Otherwise, why would he change when Lucy arrives?
Rather than frame it as, like, wrong, I'd almost frame it as... like, because that sort of vulnerability, particularly for Verona and her dad, but I think for most people, like you...
Sure.
You don't want to express that vulnerability to most people. You have some people who you can be vulnerable with like that. And Lucy is not that for Brett, so he quickly smartens up to not show her that. And for me, what it's highlighting is that it's fucked up that Verona is that person for him because she should not be. She's his daughter.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it.
And... I mean, like, this is sort of one of those moments where my pity for Brett overpowers the hatred I have, because he does have that moment where he breaks down and he's like, I've got the quote here, he says, like, it's moments like this where I miss having someone to hold me, hug me, shoulder some of this. This is too hard. It's so hard. And I take it back. The anger and the pity are in equal parts, because, like, fuck you for saying that to your daughter. Like, that's not... This is not a responsibility you put on your daughter. But also, hearing that for him is just so sad. And you're just like, fuck, this guy just needs help. Like, he's just lonely and he needs to have someone in his life. I mean, first off, he needs to become someone that someone would want to have in their life. Like, he's just lonely and sad. And it's such a shame. Like, if he didn't have a daughter, like, if he's on his own, you just feel sorry for Brett.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Sorry for Brett. Maybe. I didn't pity him as much in this moment. I was just pretty, I don't know.
I got really hit by that line about he needing someone to hold him and hug him. Like, that just really gave me that sense of just how lonely and... sad he is. And then you're right, like, then you remember he's saying this to his daughter and I'm like, oh,
if he was doing literally anything to change his situation, I would feel a bit more pity for him, you know what I mean? Like, he is so, all he seems to do is think that his life is shit and then refuse to take any actions to do anything about it, right?
Yeah, but again, I can't, sometimes you just end up in a hole so deep. Like, I don't know how he's meant to come out. Like, it's, or I think there's a way out, but it's going to be hard and he can't do it alone. Like, I don't think you can end up in as deep a hole as Brett is and surface on your own. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, I think he does need support. And that, like, that's what's so heartbreaking about it to me, is I do genuinely believe he needs someone to get him out of this. And the only person he can see who could do that is Verona, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Like, it's not like he hasn't had opportunities to get that help, right? Like, you know, I feel like I'm moderately an empathetic person, at least. But he can't just continue to be toxic and refuse. Like, he is going to therapy, right? Like, and yet he doesn't seem to be engaging. I forget what it's called, but the Child Welfare Service has clearly given him feedback and things that he should be trying to improve on, and he's clearly just not engaging with it, right? Like, he's not putting in any effort to change, like, despite the fact that he's in a whole year, but he needs to put in some, he needs to be
somewhat willing. You can't fix someone who doesn't want to be fixed, and like, that's where it feels like Brett is going to kind of be at.
I mean, like, we can compare Brett to Melissa, right? Who I think was in not as deep of a hole, perhaps, but in a hole. And
no, I would argue she was in as deep a hole. It just wasn't as bad because she didn't have a dependent.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think if Melissa had been a mum at that time, which, you know, she was 14, so that's not really possible. But, you know, like, if she'd had someone she had to take care of. Although, actually, Sir kind of... and now people are pointing that in the chat just as I said it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sir kind of helped her get better. So, yeah, maybe I take that back.
See, this is the thing. Like, I feel like Melissa, despite also being in somewhat of a hole and struggling to get out of it, you can tell that she has been trying to take advantage of the support systems that kind of are being presented to her. You know, I don't know, like my patience for VD is just completely run out. My pity.
I guess I'm coming at this from an angle of how do we fix him?
Mm.
I'm still desperately clinging on to the idea that there is a way, not that Verona will ever be a part of this or be a part of his life, but just like from Brett's perspective, can we ever get Brett to a point where he's not miserable for himself? And like, yeah, I agree. It's tough because I think the support that he's being given is also kind of a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like the therapy and stuff is tricky with just like the way that's often perceived in society. And like that's still kind of a failure on his end to get over that and like appreciate it. But you know, like I can see how he's not in a position to really give it the credit is due. But then, yeah, at the same time, Verona is always the wrinkle in this where it's like, you put aside what patience or feeling sorry for him I'd have, because it's like, you need to get your shit together for Verona.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, let's move on. So, Lucy, Verona, and Mallory head over to the house on Half Street for more prep. And, you know, we're in the realm of doing fan theories this week, so I'm just going to put it out there. It's going to be revealed that Mallory is actually the underside version of Melissa, and they're two halves of the same coin, and I'm just staking my claim on it now.
No, she's the Undercity Avery. That's why there's the three of them hanging out.
Oh, that's
out.
Interesting. Yeah, that could track. Yeah, I like that.
I know there's no such thing
as an Undercity version, but it's still very fun, theoretically, to think about.
Walbo's done his absolute best to make the text make it clear that that's not how this works, but it's not going to stop us from...
Lapsed classicist in chat says Undercity Sheridan, which I really like.
Oh, that's fun.
That's good.
I mean, isn't Sheridan already Undercity Sheridan? Would you notice the difference?
Yeah, good on you. Get her. Roast her.
But yeah. No, I love this moment like when they first show up and Mallory is getting like full on hit with the like leave this place vibes. Like Verona has set up these wards to give everyone the heebie-jeebies and make them leave. And Mallory like dropped her protection from it. So she's just like out here fucking miserable. Every bone in her body is telling her she has to leave. But she stays. Mm. And she doesn't fight Verona on the friend label. And it's just this moment of, it's really cool seeing Verona make friends like this. Like Mallory literally stands through the universe trying to make her leave to hang out with Verona here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. good stuff. Mallory does the comedy beats in this section. Yeah. The one I really liked is they're talking about Mallory's stepmom, and Lucy says, "How does that even work? You just materialize into existence and you have a stepmom? Why not a regular mum? Because my mum is dead, jerk," Mallory told Lucy. And it's just so fucking funny. Oh, it's so good.
I love how all of the Undercity denizens just have a complete lack of interest.
Yeah, in like explaining how they exist. Yeah.
Like everyone sort of says to them, "Hey, isn't that weird?" And they're always like, "I guess, like, but it just is." Like,
Or like, it's no different from the way that you humans just exist. And everyone's like, it's completely different. What are you talking about?
I do. Oh, there have been a few "know you" moments which have landed. But just every time somebody from the normal world brings up something that's weird about it, just the way all the Undercity people are just unanimously like, who cares? It's just so fun because it's like, it should be existential. It's existentially horrifying to us, but they don't seem to give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite was the bit where she talks about, I've got the quote here. "My stepmom is a massive pain. She runs a daycare and a kennel. She does this thing she calls brown milk and feeds the babies and dogs from this big trough of milk mixed with dog food twice a day." Which is just... I mean, thank God Wildbo became an author and didn't do daycare.
Yeah, you think this is his small business idea, a way to cut costs for daycare, while also, you know, ensuring that each kid has a fun dog to play with.
It's good. It's good economics if you think about it. Like, yeah. Brown milk is just smart. Like, the amount you save yourself while being able to run two businesses simultaneously, that it's just, you know, good capitalism.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it saves down, it saves on, you know, overhead merging the the kennel and the and the childcare center. Yeah. It's just a good idea. Like,
dog food wouldn't even mix good with milk. It'd be so clumpy.
How dare you say that without having tried it? And I think I'd like to announce...
don't do it. No. I connected that thought, I think, at the same time as you. And that was the opposite reaction. We're not doing brown milk for the live stream.
Or are we? Stay tuned to find out. Anyway, let's move on. I want to call out this bit where Verona does this like theory crafting with the practice, which I just think is great. Like, it's I guess it kind of reminds me of the 100 years of solitude thing, where Hazel just seems to be so naturally gifted with being a finder. She kind of develops her instincts in a way that allows her to kind of draw connections so well in a way that other people just won't kind of understand. And it feels like Verona is starting to lead into that, like her natural gift with the practice, plus the fact that she's exposed to a lot of like others that she interacts with, which is presumably not especially common for practitioners to have such friendly relationships with them, means that she is leading to making connections and getting insights that I think not a lot of people are aware of. And I don't know if that has time to play out in this story, but like, I see it being a great thing for her to kind of become as she grows, is like a magical researcher or scientist kind of type, which I just think is really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I just really enjoy these segments where we kind of get walked through theory like this. But yeah, I think she calls herself a nascent sorcerer, when she starts the domain ritual. And I think from memory, a sorcerer in this world is like a powerful magician who hasn't specialized. Like, like we've seen the term dabbler used in this story.
Yeah.
Which is like dabbler is someone who hasn't really picked something. And I think sorcerer is hasn't picked something, but is still powerful and good at shit. And so like, yeah, this is almost Verona committing to not having a specialty in a way, which is really awesome. Because as you said, I remember ages ago, one of our theories for her specialty would be as like a middleman who would connect others and practitioners. And this feels like an even cooler version of that, that you're suggesting, like this idea that she just, is like a researcher almost, just using her unique position to not specialize, but just do a bunch of cool thought experiments.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's I think that's definitely what I see Verona kind of growing into. Definitely.
Yeah. I wonder though, like to talk about what she actually thinks about, which is, you know, the undercity denizens perhaps being part animus, part echo, part vestige, and like all this other stuff. Like, what do you reckon that actually means? Like, why would Wildbow tell us this?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have a little trouble following what the thread that Verona was connecting was here for sure.
Yeah. The closest I've got is that she mentions that a lot of it is like unresolved stuff in the present that's forming them rather than like echoes of things in the past. So I wonder, like, is this just more stuff priming us for the idea that bringing Kennet's undercity into harmony with Kennet above is actually a healing process? Because if the undercity is largely built of people who represent unresolved tension in the present, then, you know, like bringing them equally up and making harmony there is resolving that tension in a way. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Also, we need to talk about Mallory's comments on this assignment they've got from
which is from the real undercity.
Yeah. And this comes from Mrs. Morehouse. So this is from your self insert.
Yep.
I love how Mallory, like, because this is what the Undercity has been doing in Verona's story since day one, is kind of highlighting how much of the real world is bullshit, and like the Undercity has its problems too, but it also had some things that were better. And Mallory's just a great voice for that here, where it's like, you read this assignment and Mallory's just like, you guys live in the hell world.
Which, I don't know, kind of true. When you think about it, makes you think, you know, we live in a society, Elliot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love this as a thing I don't think we touched on for a while, the story, just reminding us that, like, yeah, the Undercity has its problems, but it's also let go of the rules of society for the better, and this is one of the better cases, is not having assignments like this.
Yep.
Where, like, all of the focus was on how the marking would be done based on whether you did the right font and shit. Like, fucking hell.
Yes. Pretty rough. But yeah, so Verona starts working on a little creation and Tasha shows up for a bit.
Yeah, and, you know, worth mentioning, Verona is essentially paralyzed with pain because she's been overworking herself.
Mm-hmm.
So lesson, as you mentioned, lesson from the hand injury not yet learnt. Again, things seem okay in the end, but this is just one of those moments where I'm like, Verona is really putting herself at unnecessary risk trying to cram all this prep in for the ritual.
Mm.
Like, she's doing that thing that I feel like we've all done, where you're so worried about the event that, you know, you stay up the night before doing extra work and then you're too fucking tired the next day to perform as well as you wanted anyway.
Yep. Yeah, it. I don't know what to expect from this domain ritual, but it's very worrying.
It's going to be a clusterfuck. I can't wait.
Yeah. We get a few more beats of awkwardness between Verona and Tash here. Like, Verona asks Tash if she wants to move in, and we don't really get any kind of real response. Tash is just kind of like, probably not, kind of vibe. I feel like we haven't got the resolution to, like, the Tasha turning Verona down as a familiar. Like, we kind of know that Tasha isn't interested, just based on the fact that it's been, like, 2 weeks or whatever. I don't know. Like, it feels like there's something that needs to be exposed or dug into there, like a nugget of conflict that needs to be unearthed before their relationship can kind of resolve in any way.
I got the sense of... either last week or the week before, it was mostly covered with, like, Tasha sort of saying she was too young.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which I kind of like this as a thing from Verona. Like, I can see the logic in Verona's head of, like, okay, like, Tasha doesn't want to be my familiar right now because, you know, too early, like, blah, blah, blah. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
Why don't we try moving in together for a bit? Like, you know, if we go to the analogy of marriage for familiarship, living together before you get married, pretty good idea.
Yeah.
So this feels like I'm choosing to read this as a bit of a positive, like, you know, Verona is suggesting this to Tashlet as a sort of way to be like, well, let's keep trying to get to know each other better, I guess. But also I understand Tashlet wanting to wait until she actually has the place and we have an idea of what it's going to look like before she commits.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, especially, you know, we get a reminder that Tashlet hates cats in this chapter. Like,
mm-hmm.
Verona is, like, our cat kindertier, so...
yeah, it's true.
If she's going to turn this place into a cat house, Tashlet's not going to want to be there.
It's a good point. I've never really picked up on the fact that there's a clear kind of, metaphorical divide between the two of them there.
Yeah, exactly.
Verona finishes this creation, giving it power and structure from, like, things and spirits and her grab bag of tricks. And we get a big new other.
Yeah. I just want to say, I really enjoy this process here where, like, Walbo just sort of does a big theory dump on us. Like, Well, we have this whole thing of Walbo / Verona walk us through the whole system they've built for this ritual, like discussing why everything is where it is, even discussing strategies they didn't go through but they thought about to, like, help us understand alternatives and how, like, better understand the underlying systems. Like, especially because this ritual is like building up from multiple stuff we've learned throughout the last year and a half. Like it's got the soul and self thing, like the seven power points of the body and stuff. Like I just really enjoy the way we can walk through rituals like this. And there's nothing to talk about for it on the podcast, but it's just cool being like, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense. And yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it all amounts in a big meat boy.
It does. Can we talk about what happens to the spirits that are used? Like, you know, Vroni uses Lot for this and it kind of ends up with Lot's face. Is that like, is Lot like a part of this thing while it's created? Like, I don't know. It gives me kind of weird vibes. Although maybe it's more like a, you know, Power Rangers combining thing than like smushing together different entities. I don't really know.
Yeah, I wondered that. There's that sort of existential thing you get into with like lesser others where it's like, yeah, how much is she reshaping them, changing them by doing this? Like, I almost got the vibe because she references sacrificing a few of the objects. It's yes. Like, if this meat boy gets destroyed, I got the impression that like something like the
are
rasp,
they all gone? Yeah,
would
exactly.
We get drained. So yeah, does that apply to the spirits? Should we care? I feel like the spirits are big enough that I'd care. Like they seem person enough. They're like, you know, a step above pets in my eyes. So like I'd be upset at existentially toying with them like this. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like that how reminiscent this creature is of her sight, that it's just a big meat boy.
And the idea of creating, of like taking aspects of different spirits to make a big thing is just very fun.
But it's very Verona that like the form is almost like the material form comes from a failed homunculus. Like she really doesn't kind of give a shit how it's presented. What she builds is like her focus is much more on what she can put into it and like what it's going to turn into.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing Verona summon something like this during the domain ritual. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. I think it's just going to flop. I'm worried for her that she's going to put all this effort in and it's just going to be
nothing. Yeah, maybe. So, Jeremy comes over a bit later and they do the assignment together, among other things. Just a kind of nice vignette.
Yeah, I like the bit where they're working on the assignment and like Verona keeps having the really good ideas on the subject. But she also needs to rely on Jeremy to help her do things like the bibliography. Like, even in this assignment, he's still kind of her attachment to that societal aspect of the assignment, you know, the real world part of it. Like, we already established with Mallory that all the shit, like worrying about the bibliography and the font, is all the very Ken and above shit. And Jeremy is her tie to that still, even as they're working on this.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a short little moment. We'll get some more Jeremy time a little bit later, and I think we'll touch on it a bit there.
Yeah.
Then Verona goes off to raid the underside version of the house on Half Street, kind of kicking some ass. I think I want to talk about this scene a bit, though, because it's pretty brutal, right? Like, Verona has the thought of, like, oh, I don't want to use a spirit to host a spirit or anything because it has to be me doing the beating up. And then she just kind of proceeds to beat the shit out of these people with a wooden table leg, which is like really visceral in a way that Verona's fights usually aren't.
Yeah, it's pretty full on. She really is leaning into being that terrifying undercity enforcer that we've seen.
Mm.
And I mean, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it really makes me. I don't know. Sometimes you get segments with Verona where, you know, she talks about like how she's detaching from her emotions as she's doing this. And it's just the kind of stuff that sometimes with the Verona chapter, you're left with a real uneasy taste in your mouth or like a real uneasy feeling. And I don't know, like that's what this section was like for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I don't. Yeah. It's that classic like. Yeah, a classic Verona Undercity vibe of terrifying, but also I kind of see it's nice to see her just kick ass and do well at something.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That is nice. But yeah.
Like, so... I enjoyed this segment of the chapter just because it was like, this felt like the segment where we took away all of the pressure and just let Verona beat the shit out of things and do good. Mm-hmm. So it's almost cathartic in a way, which is probably not a good opinion to have, but I do.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough, I suppose. That's definitely the opinion Verona has of it, is treating it as some kind of catharsis. But yeah, so we cut to the morning. Jeremy is about to leave and then Miss arrives. And yeah, it's time for the ritual. Let's touch on Jeremy first, though, shall we? Because it's a sweet moment, and the red flags are lessened here. But Verona does think that he's leaning back towards that question, which is presumably, you know, officializing their relationship or whatever you want to call it, right? Like some labels, basically.
I think what's really fun about this, though, is the way she phrases it. I've got the exact quote here, which is, it felt like he was edging closer to that question, that topic of conversation, when he'd ask, why couldn't they just try it? And what I love is, like, when I first read that, my instinct from reading thousands of, or seeing and reading thousands of crappy stories is always like, in terms of the boy asking, why couldn't they just try it? That's usually asking about sex. And I love that, like, Verona is going through this story, which is just this great inversion of the classical romantic sort of vibe, because they're having sex and that's fine. She's got no problems with that. But then he wants to ask about the more romantic side of things. And that's where she's like, no. And I'm really enjoying just that simple inversion of the classic tropes.
Yeah. No, it's fun, isn't it? I don't know. Just like, you know, Verona's focusing on the domain ritual right now, but you can feel that this is like hanging in the back of her head and in the back of our heads, because almost certainly it's, you know, it's hanging over the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, the ritual fight's going to break out. I still don't know who it's going to be with. Rook, maybe. Charles is going to send some peeps, maybe. I don't think so. I mean, they've got permission from Liz and therefore Charles by default.
I thought this was covered under their truce.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Musa going to fuck some shit up, perhaps? I mean, busy himself, but...
Yeah, you know. Miss's whole job was to make sure he couldn't be involved, so...
Well, sorry. Hopefully. When I say Musa, I mean Musa's not involved himself, sure, because he's going to be busy, but... You know, he has a whole network of people, right?
I got the impression Miss was meant to make sure as many of them as possible were too distracted. But
I think
like one or two slipping through the cracks.
Anthem is the one that feels like to me. Mirthstrike, Leps Classes. A few people are thinking Anthem. Arapocalypse thinks America or Liberty sent by Anthem. I don't know. That feels a bit too extreme. but I would like to see a bit of an Anthem beatdown.
I mean, the only way I could see that happening, though, is if Avery is also coming back for this, whereas I got the impression she's more running interference of her own.
I don't know.
There's a throwaway line that mentions it. Anthem and the Liberty stuff is too Avery-centric for me to think it would come up here. Yeah. I could more see that happening in parallel. Like Avery said she's going to be running interference. Maybe that is with Anthem while this is going on.
Mm. Yeah.
I think we were told quite specifically that the family man will come back at some point. I'd fucking love for the family man and some of his peeps to show up.
Yeah, true. He's been hanging in the background. It would make sense. He's, you know, close enough. The fact that this is a...
the chat is saying the foreman too, which is a good foreman, point. He's a bit of a dick.
This is in three realms, right? She's making a domain claim in the Undercity, in Kennet Above, and also in the lost version of Kennet that is yet to come. Potentially that means some lost could show up, the ballerina or God, the wolf, potentially. Again, that feels quite like it should be quite an Avery-centric encounter, though, which it wouldn't be. I mean, unless Avery also uses the same thing to come help out. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of it would be, maybe less with the wolf, but with, like, things like the ballerina. I think that's where Miss, as a person on the sidelines, could come in, because Like, assuming that people can challenge you, but it doesn't have to be, like, straight up, you know, hand-to-hand combat, but you can negotiate terms. It would be great for, like, someone like the ballerina to show up, and then Miss is like, hey, don't worry, it's cool. And, like negotiating with the Lost as the first stage of her forming Lost Kennet.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we don't know what to expect, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah. I still love that we don't really have a sense of what a domain ritual looks like, really. Like, we know that people can challenge you. We don't know what the rules are there. I think we heard it was similar to the things we saw in 14.z, like when Basil took the wardship. I think it was said that domain rituals were similar-ish, so I'm kind of mapping it to that in my head.
Yeah.
Which was like, that was one where people would sometimes challenge, but then not actually fight you. But like, yeah, yes. How long does it go for?
Well, yeah, what the challenge rules? Doesn't have to be a fight. It can be a bargain kind of vibe, definitely.
Yeah. But then, yeah, like what are the rules? Like, what does it mean for Verona? If Lucy does all her fighting and misleads negotiations, how much does that hurt the claim being hers? Like, we don't really know a lot of what this ritual entails. And I think that's fun because it was the same when we did the familiar ritual and when we did Lucy's implement ritual especially. Like, I love that Walbo kind of keeps us in the dark so we get to experience these rituals in this way where we don't really know what's happening.
Mm. Yeah. I'm excited for it, though. It's going to be fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, something's going to happen. Surely this will get messy somehow, and I can't wait.
Mm. But yeah, so that's the end of the chapters, I suppose. So let's get into some pale predictions. Predictions that the community has left in our pale predictor form, which you can find linked in the show notes down below. Do you want to start us off, Elliot?
Yeah, so I'm actually glad nobody brought this up because this was a risky one to bring. I brought a prediction from Fairlax, who predicts Verona's domain claim will be challenged by the ghoul leader of the Unborn, because that would be their third confrontation.
Hmm.
Which I love as well, because he's meant to be one of Liz's, like, people she wants to bring in. So that gets, like, super messy if he challenges the domain.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. Very messy. I've got a horrifying prediction here, Elliot. From Steve,
yeah, I love this one.
Basically saying, you know, we know the doom is weakening, etc. And there's still a syringe of doom energy. Matthew is potentially going to use the syringe to give himself a bit of a boost at a critical moment, but it's going to be tainted with something from Marisica, which will be the piece that lets Matthew get back together with Edith, as Marisica has kind of promised, fulfilling that kind of promise to Edith that Mariska has made, which is just so horrifying. And like, the thread of Mariska having clearly not kept her bargain to Edith is really stuck in my brain, and it makes me really worried that something horrifying like this is going to happen.
Any prediction of Matthew getting back with Edith is just inherently that's a 10 out of 10 horrifying problem.
Yeah, forget the dishes, this is a real 10 out of 10. It's just gross.
Horrifying, but yeah, I can see it. That's what I hate the most.
So thanks for that, Steve R. You've really cursed us all. Well, that's the end of our show, Elliot.
Pretty much, yeah. We've got a discussion question. Those are back now because we're both back.
I've just been recording this whole time, actually.
Shit, I got tricked.
You got tricked.
You did that fairy thing where you predicted everything I was going to say perfectly.
Mm.
So what's our discussion question this week, Ruben?
Our discussion question is, now that discussion questions are back, what's the deal with Pisces and Hazel?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a question we didn't properly get to ask because we're on break, and also now people have had time to really dig into it. So let's get all those big ass theories on Pisces and Hazel out here.
Yeah.
I've almost got one together. I really sat down before I did the last episode by myself to try and come up with my own to present that episode. And I just can't quite get it to come together. I might workshop it in the Discord. I feel like it's close, but I can't come up with something I'm happy with.
Fair enough. But yeah, you can leave your answers to the discussion question in our discussion thread, which will be linked in the show notes down below. And hey, if you enjoyed the show, why not leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice? They, I think, help people find the show and help get more people into Wild Bo stories, which I know is something that we all try to do.
Yeah, the Wild Bo fandom is all a big pyramid scheme to get more people involved in Wild Bo. So do your part, I guess. Don't forget to check out our Twitter as well. That's where we post news and also memes. In fact, we have an exciting collaboration coming up on that Twitter soon.
Yes, starting in two days.
Yeah, it starts in 2 days.
Should we announce it or should we let it be a surprise? We've got pretty big name star helping us out with memes.
So yeah, I think they have scheduled the first tweet already with the details.
Yeah.
So we'll let them announce it when it goes live.
Okay. Yeah, so that's in 2 days. So check out the Twitter if you want pale memes because we post them all a lot every day.
We also got a website, doofmedia.com. That's where you can find all the other Doof shows. Kingslingers is still going strong. We probably don't plug that one enough, but if you miss Matt and Scott from the Parahumans days, they're deep in Stephen King stuff, and that show, I haven't listened to as much of it as I'd like because I haven't read as much Stephen King as I'd like, but it's always a blast.
Yeah, I was listening. I also have not read as much Stephen King as I would like, but I went through it when they were doing The Dark Tower, and I recently listened to the Doofcast episode on Spider-Man No Way Home, which was a movie that I really loved and wanted to hear Scott and Matt's thoughts on. And there were a lot of really interesting points that they came up with in that chat. Interesting and unique points about, you know, the MCU and films as a whole, which I thought was great. So definitely recommend it. If you want to find out more about those, you can go to doofmedia.com. And if you want to support the creation of all the shows on the Doof Media Network, you can go to patreon.com/doofmedia. You can become a donor and get access to bonus episodes and all kinds of other fun perks.
Yep, and don't forget to stop by a Wild Bo's Patreon, patreon.com/WildBo. He wrote this story.
He takes your donations and puts a bit of spirit in the heart, your donations in the hand, and turns it into a homunculus of great stories. So if you want to support that, go to his Patreon and have a good time. All right. And with that, we're out.